Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Transformation Cafe, a weekly half hour of light, topical conversation about spirituality, healing, energy, alternative medicine, higher levels of consciousness, and other insights. We're glad you're here. Transformation Cafe, a fun way to nourish your spirit. Now, let's get started and introduce our diners for tonight's show.
Well, good evening, everybody. We want to welcome you to the Transformation Cafe. Always nice to have everybody here. And if you're listening by demand after we've gotten this show off the road here, we want to thank you for checking us out on the road. And it's always kind of nice to listen to something while you're driving around, and hopefully that's what you're doing. And if we have any people who want to scoot in on the table, we've got we'll be having our chat room open. And if people want to go ahead and get on that, they can go ahead and be checking us out on that as well. And Miss Gloria is scooting up. Hey, Miss Glory, how are you tonight? Oh, wait a minute. There you are. Miss Glory, how are you?
Hi there. I'm doing great. How are you doing?
I'm doing great. I'm doing great. And I am Robin Misevich, one of the other regular diners here. I'm always getting scolded because I don't introduce myself, so there you go. One of the regular diners here as well. We are going to talk a little bit about heart intelligence tonight. I thought that would be kind of an interesting thing to be able to talk about. Back on show 209, my sister Amy had done a whole show on happiness and energy medicine, and we were talking a little bit about heart math and then how they're redoing all different kinds of research. And this week I went ahead and started doing my journaling class, doing it as a spiritual practice. And one of the unique things that I've brought into the program that I've got going on, and it's actually called Taproot. We're taprooting into your being and learning how to be able to go deeper using the journaling process. And one of the things that we talked about this week, which was our class one of the six-week series that we're going to be doing, is talking about how on a physiological level, how we connect to ourselves on just a deeper level. And there's actually four different ways that we do that. And, you know, one is working through actually just pressure waves of the way the body responds. Another way is the chemical waves when we are working with our hormones and neurotransmitters. We have that going on. Another level is actually with electromagnetics that basically connect to the body. And it's interesting to know when we look at how the heart is being created. If you go to heartmath.org, there's just a treasure trove of all different kinds of articles and information. And actually, it started back in 1991 was when they first started doing a lot of this research. And what they found was that when it comes to the heart is, one of the first organs that's being created in the fetus, but they found through the research that the heart actually has its own brain, which is really just incredible. And that the level with the electromagnetics is just an amazing thing. It's like 500 times stronger when you look at the amount of energy put out from the heart as opposed to the brain's energy. And I thought it would be really interesting to get Glory and I kind of talking about that on a level of just the different kinds of things that are out there and some of her knowings that she has about working with that. One thing they do have that's interesting is they have a program and actually a couple different products that they work with. And one is called the EM Wave 2. And what it is it's a biofeedback machine that helps people to come into a natural rhythm with themselves. And one thing that I presented in the journaling class, since we're getting connected to nature, getting connected to working with the flowers' energies and the flowers' wisdom, is on a wavelength level, our heart beats at it when it's at its natural, healthy state. It beats at the same rhythm as nature does. For per cycle, if you go into a nature cycle and you went into our heart cycle, it would be exactly the same and it would be in sync with one another. And one of the ways you can get into that is by drumming. And drumming really helps us to come into kind of a slower, more heartbeat. In the Native American, they would go ahead and be doing like the natural heartbeat when it comes to levels of being in circle and things like that. It's very traditional for them to be doing the rhythm of the heart. And I just think it's really interesting that we're trying all these technology levels to being able to connect to that when on a very basic level at our core of who we are as a beings, that we know that on a very nature level. So, Gloria, what do you think about that when it comes to levels of working with the energies and just slowing yourselves down on a level? I know that you've been involved in, Native American traditions with sweat lodges and things like that. And I'd love to get your input on what you think about that.
Well, I was recently listening to a broadcast. There's a series that is on NPR, and they're talking about brain and vibrations and the vibration rate within the cellular structure of the human body itself. And they talk about how you can adjust your brain based on your wavelength. And that comes, I believe that that is tied into the medicine of biofeedback and different sciences. There are a number of things that science has been exploring that a lot of the metaphysics have been talking about now for quite some time. They were just told. And now science has been catching up to various aspects. And the binaural beat, it's been widely known for quite some time that the rhythm of the heartbeat is the binaural beat, and that is tied in to a lot of the Native American drumming. And so when you either go to a sweat lodge or you go to any kind of a powwow, you can get music that's on CDs, used to be on tape, that sort of thing, with the different beat. It will change not only the brainwave function, but it also changes the vibrations in your cell. And when you consider that cell is an osmotic type of structure, if you have a vibration, the resonance is going to start pulling a lot of the, I guess you could call it refuse. I don't want to go with the armpit conversation we were having earlier. But
they're like, what?
But when your body discards a lot of the impurities and the things that don't serve it, you may think that there's muscle contraction, but when you get into a cellular level, you start recognizing that it's a vibrational pattern. And the vibration,
you know, I'd be interested to find out. Yeah, I just had a thought. I wonder if, you know, I'd love to have them do some kind of a test for people who are actually in a room and they're doing drumming as opposed to just listening to the drumming, if there would be a difference.
It would be different because the resonance from the actual drum vibration that is hitting the cellular structure of the body versus listening to it, where you're going to get an audible tone if it's out loud, if you've only got it in your headset, then it's only going to be in your eardrums, and it would affect you internally more so than externally, I believe. That's my opinion.
Yeah.
I'm unqualified, and I don't know what I'm talking about, but just common sense when you look at the way that the sound waves are being vibrated and how they would affect the body, as well as, you know, just you can have color around you, and the vibration from color, whether you are looking at it or not, will affect you. They have done studies with that so that you can tell that your body is still affected, even if you cannot physically look where you know that you're seeing the color can be in the room, and the vibration of that color will affect your body.
Yeah, I did a really wonderful series a few years ago where we actually went through all the different colors, and it was like an 8-week series that we did. And I really did my best to have everything in the room be the color of that week that we were doing. And I invited everybody to wear the color. We ate that color. We just, like, everything was immersed in that color. And what was cool was it just happened by chance that orange was the week of Halloween.
Well,
we had this
nice
wonderful
thing,
kind of Halloween orange party. Yeah, so it was just very, very interesting. And,
The nice thing about color and playing with color is that you you can do it with sound as well. It's just that it's different. It's a different concept when you think about what I'm going to say. Color, most people think about seeing it. Then you talk about the vibration from it when you think about the oscillations and you're looking at the various sine waves that color creates. It's still seen as an external thing. If you use your mind, you can imagine inhaling the color. You can imagine that vibration inside the body and working from the inside out, as well as it affecting it from the outside in. So you can immerse yourself, inhale it, drink it. smell it.
Yeah, everything. I think I, you know, knowing what I know now, I mean, that was a few years ago when I did that class, I would just work at it a little bit different level, and it would be really fascinating to see how people are now with that as opposed, I mean, everybody loved the class, but it would be interesting to see how people respond to it, and you know, in that way now. It would be interesting. So I was looking through the HeartMath. If you go to heartmath.org, like I said, there's just all different kinds of wonderful articles there. One in particular that got my attention was called Heart Intelligence, and it really goes into some of the basics of some of the stuff that they've looked at over the years for research and stuff like that. And what's interesting is that, you know, they going back to the research that they did, you know, through the growth of a fetus, is, you know, the heart gets created and then the emotional brain almost at the same time is getting created. So, you know, the heart's beating, as soon as the heart's beating and it's created its own brain, then it goes back into having the emotional brain and the intuitive signals and stuff developed before the analytical brain gets created. And it was kind of funny. I was talking about that last night, and I just said, yeah, aren't we glad that happened? Because can you imagine an intellectual brain and, you know, you stand there and say, there's a saber-toothed tiger coming at me. I wonder if that's really, if he's really going to come and get me, or you start being analytical about the whole thing instead of just fleeing for your life and going, ah, you know, that kind of thing. So I thought that was kind of an interesting thing. So it was really, you know, making it look at, well, let's get down to the vertex here about what are we really talking about when it comes to just the intelligence of the brain and the heart and how that comes from everything. And even in, you know, ancient times, it always talked about the wisdom of the heart. So, you know, I think as, you know, man, we've always known on just a very deep level that it's about, you know, what's really true comes from the heart instead of the head.
Well, and that brings up that saying, the heart wants what it wants. It's like the heart knows.
Yeah, the heart wants what it wants.
The heart has a mind of its own.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, whether that's good or bad, you know, depending on what the heart wants, you know, and that kind of stuff. So, but they're saying, you know, the heart's intrinsic brain and nervous system relies on information back to the brain. And everything comes from the heart to the brain and then goes out into our environment and comes back into the brain, I mean, into the heart again. So this beautiful, you know, infinite energy that's going on that comes continually back into the heart for like the heart check. We've got these heart checks that are kind of happening with everything. So it's interesting to really kind of know that on just so many different levels. One thing that I thought was really cool is they were talking about, you know, just that level of the beats, the beat of the heart, and then the beat of the natural world around it. And science has done a bunch of different research working with plants and stuff. And there was, you know, they can study nowadays where they can get electromagnetic and a couple other frequency levels of megahertz and stuff like that the plants are giving off. And then they're studying with plants with, you know, in connection with people being around them and seeing how everything gets entrained with one another when you can allow yourself to just slow down and get connected to something. It's very interesting how we adapt and we're, you know, slowing ourselves down. And again, that goes back into appreciation. That goes back into really admiring and being grateful for what's in front of us instead of coming from, you know, it has to be very non-judging and having a compassionate heart and coming from that level of appreciation. And automatically everything slows down and puts us in just to a different perspective. So I think that was really interesting too. But it's, you know what, if it goes back into all these different kinds of practices of meditation and contemplation and really coming from a level of learning to be in tune with your body. So, you know, all the practices of yoga and Tai Chi and Qigong and, you know, just pretty much all the different kinds of practices that are out there with motion, it's that level of connecting both internally and externally about where am I within myself and how is that being expressed through my body and then into the environment that I have going on. So I think that's kind of an interesting thing too. So
one of the other interesting areas that is being looked at with sound, they're studying and they've been using sound to work with Alzheimer's patients.
Mm.
They have dance therapy, but it's based on the rhythm and the beat of the music. And it helps people with Alzheimer's to not suffer as much. That's what they're finding.
Definitely.
This study is still ongoing.
That's wonderful. So are they kind of gearing it toward a certain time in their lives when depending on how old the patient is, that would be something that could help them to trigger them into?
I think it's not so much about age as it is about time of the day as well. And because, like, you have sundowners in a lot of different patients where the brain chemistry changes, and it's almost, you can almost set your clock by it. And they will develop a whole different personality. Some downers, they have to get up and move. It's like they have to go. They don't know why. They don't know where. They just know they have to get up and move. So all day long, he could be saying, I can't walk. Please help me get up. And the clock strikes whatever time. I think it's like around 6, 6:30. And all of a sudden, they're up and racing across the room, and you would never know there was anything wrong with them.
I got to get up and boogie.
It's an amazing experience.
It's their boogie time. Yeah,
well,
boogie time.
I think it's tied into time of day, not so much about age or where they are within the process, the evolutionary process of Alzheimer's, the progression of it. So
that's interesting.
I'm
thinking of a story that Deepak Chopra had one time where they had done research where they had a certain collection of older people, and they had taken them to a resort, and they converted the majority of the resort into it like at least 20 to 30 years younger than they were at that time. And they say, be as you were during that time. So all the radio programs, all the music, everything they had, even the clothing and things like that of the people that were there, it's like they could immerse themselves into that time period. And they went ahead and studied them, I think. Yeah, but it was like a week or a week and a half or 2 weeks. And, yeah, no, that doesn't sound like fun. And what happened was is that on a cellular level, they were becoming younger.
Mm-hmm.
The bodies were changing, and they could see that. And, of course, as soon as they left that environment, they started aging again.
Well, and that ties into
kind of that mind over matter kind of thing, you know.
That ties into the placebo effect and how the brain and the thoughts really affect your physiology.
Yeah.
And so the placebo effect and the mind beyond or mind above. Most people say mind over matter. I believe it's mind beyond matter.
Mind beyond matter. Well, and your address is, mind beyond matter. So there you go. So that's good. One of the things I thought was interesting, too, that kind of got me started on this stuff was I had read an article about a cardiologist that had found that half of his patients did not have anything medically wrong with them for them to have a heart attack. He could not figure out why they were having any kind of heart issues. And what they found was, is like what we're talking about, with this level of the electromagnetics and the pressures and stuff, the wavelengths were not being in sync with their environments. They were overly stressed, and they were basically, the heart didn't know how to be able to have any kind of a sense of rhythm. So
right.
It's interesting to see that was a real dynamic.
Yeah, it lost its foundational grounding.
Yeah, exactly. And as soon as they were able to get themselves, back into a nature wavelength, they were able to get themselves in a place where, they were, healthy again. And the recovery time was way quicker because they recognized what was going on with that stuff. So it made me just kind of wonder, if they're, this heart math and some of the different programs they have with the E-Wave too and the different things that they have out there, or people just signing up for yoga classes and getting out there. But we had done that show with Amy. Again, that was show 209. There's a really wonderful video there of Donna Eden with her energy medicine stuff that she does. And a lot of it's going with just taking a brisk walk and having your crossovers where, you've got the opposite arm and hand moving, and you do it for about, 20 minutes. So there's, a lot to be said for just going out and having a brisk walk every day that really can help you to be in balance and helping yourself to have your, your heart and and everything working in proper alignment with each other and on an energetic level, which is just so important.
The nice thing, too, is that you can combine a bunch of different things, and you don't really need to spend a lot of time. You just need to spend that quality, focused time. And the thing that comes to mind when I heard about this, and you could combine it with what we're talking about to stay in connection with nature, I read that the British Journal of Medicine says that if you walk barefoot in the grass for about 10 minutes a day, that it helps to prevent knee problems. And they had done a study on it. So that there were less knee surgeries needed. And so if you were to walk barefoot for 10 minutes, in the grass, accordingly, if you're not allergic to grass, because some people might be. And just take that time and just shut your mind down and feel your feet in the grass and get connected to the earth and listen to the sounds of the birds or the water or the trees rustling or the people. Or, you know, if you live in New York, you could, you know, take a moment and separate the sound of the city and the dynamics of technology and human invention and just take a moment and listen to the air. You know, hear the air between the sounds of the city. Listen to the birds and sort it out with your ears and just single these things out and just listen to them, and you could take just a few minutes and be so connected and refreshed. And it would, I think that that would also accomplish what you're talking about, where you're just saying, you know, get connected and into the rhythm again so that you're not overstressed.
Yeah, do go do the brisk, you know, go do that walk in, you know, in grass barefoot. There you go. I've heard too that if you're traveling and you're like in an airport and you've got jet lag, that if you do that right away, as soon as you can, you get onto the grass, it will really alleviate a lot of the jet lag. I would think so, because it helps to ground you to where you are now as opposed to where you've been. So it helps you to balance, you know, with the new energies of where you are, with your surroundings.
Yeah, there's a lot of people who could benefit from that.
Yeah, you know, you'll see how they, you know, get, good luck finding a bunch of grass at an airport.
You can take your own.
Yeah, we need the grass cafe. There we go. Of course, the people would think it was something else, too. You know how that goes.
I'm bringing a foot by foot square of sod with me.
Yeah, barefoot in the park. There we go. Yeah, barefoot at the park. And
then you get soil contaminant and quarantine issues, no doubt.
I know. Yeah, it's like, okay, here we go. Into different kinds of issues. Yeah, yeah.
Food,
yeah,
drugs.
Exactly. Yeah, you're like, you know, clean feet or something like that. Anyway, it's just so interesting how something so simple can help you to be so balanced. And like you're saying, it doesn't take a long time every day. It's just the fact that you make the time to be connecting every day.
Well, I believe it's more about closing your mind down and spending that quality time. You could spend 5 minutes completely away from everything that's disturbing or your demands of the day.
Mm-hmm.
And just 5 minutes and get a respite that's worth hours.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that goes back into, you know, when you're doing meditating. When you meditate, you're really just coming from that place of really, you know, tuning into yourself, being present with yourself, and just being.
Well,
and being able to slow it down.
Daydreaming has proven to be a stress releaser as well. And that's one of the things that a lot of parents will condition out of their children. Stop daydreaming. What are you doing? Well, daydreaming is the natural process of the brain, and it's something that we need to do as human beings to continue to stimulate our creativity, and it's just like a natural flow that affects so many physiological aspects of who we are. And that can take the place of meditating also, because when you daydream, you're working out things.
Well, I kind of think daydreaming is meditating. You know what I mean?
Exactly my point. But most people will separate it out. Meditation, and I say most people, I could be wrong, but a number of people believe that meditation is very difficult, and it's just as simple as daydreaming. And if you can daydream, that's really all you need to do.
Yeah, exactly. Anytime you've spaced out, guess what?
Because
you've been daydreaming, okay?
Level,
or you've been meditating.
My level of meditation.
There's a lot of people that meditate on the freeway.
Into a zen moment.
Yeah, these people. Yeah, people meditating on the freeway.
On the freeway,
you know. I know. You know, you pass your exit and go, where? How did that happen? Wait a minute. I thought I was like on track here. There you go. A little daydreaming while you're driving. You know how that goes. Or that in like, you know, there are so many people, you know, just opening your mind when you take a shower. It's amazing how many people who really have invented or problem solved when they've taken showers. It just seems like it's a place where you're safe and you're just got, you know, I think it's the flow of water and the flow of ideas and things like that. You allow yourself to just kind of open up and be able to, relax and have things kind of come forward for you. And that's always a good thing to do.
a shower is also a really good space for people who have ADHD or ADDs.
Mm.
You know, on the verge of it. And you can go in and you can close your eyes. And you can just gain so much focus by taking a shower or a bath with your eyes closed.
Why is that? Is that because it's the sound and then you're feeling the water and stuff? Is it a matter of the fact that you can focus?
I believe that it's one less stimulus because you're shutting down your eyesight and you are focusing your senses more on a tactile experience.
Mm-hmm.
And that's one more level of moving from being completely active into a meditative state.
Yeah.
There are some people who may find it challenging to go into meditation, and yet our brain can choose to do certain things, and some people say they cannot meditate, or they cannot be hypnotized. And a lot of it, and I'm not saying that it's not true, yet a lot of it is the choice of the brain that we make to say yes, we can, or no, we can't. It's a decision for the most part. And closing your eyes is one way. If you wanted to take yourself into a meditation practice, closing your eyes is just one step, and you just pay attention to how things feel, how things sound. You can continue to eliminate on a step-by-step process so that you get to a point where you're just sitting and thinking and feeling nothing and just experiencing. But
yeah,
again,
and then just go ahead and, yeah, then just adding in the breath, you know, breathing in slowly and breathing out slowly, you know, and they usually say to a count of four, you know, breathing in and breathing out. Mm-hmm.
Create the need to think until people get to a point where there's different levels of the meditation, and I know we've gone over it. So it's like you've got your basics, and then you go from your basics into your more advanced, and that's where you start being in the meditation state and going into a different brainwave pattern. And then you're also taking yourself through guided meditation on your own and paying attention to feedback and maintaining that different brainwave pattern. And it's practice.
Not difficult. Yeah, pretty soon you're levitating, and you know, life is grand. Okay.
People
Robin Robin's levitating. Oh my gosh! I'm like, I've never seen anybody levitate. The only one I can think of is a video of this yogi. Oh, this was quite a while ago, and he looked like he could have been levitating, but he was like bouncing or something. I don't know. You know, it's just kind of interesting that they have that whole thing kind of going on. Not that it's not possible, but you know how that goes. You just kind of go, okay.
There's an engineer out of Newport Beach. And Laguna Beach. He's got his office in Laguna Beach, and he designed some, for lack of a better word, satellite dishes, but they're not. It's like if you were to take a satellite dish and cut off the extremities so that you had a curved, like a C shape, but just down the center, you know, where the stand is.
Mm-hmm.
So a foot wide, and it's an open structure. And there was somebody who had attended one of his conferences. I'm looking for his name. I have his book. It's a fascinating book, and it goes into the science of some of the things that he was guided to make. And there was somebody who had come to the meeting, and they were saying that they had purchased some of these, and they had witnesses that they were able to levitate the energy flow from this equipment. And I walked between them, and I was amazed. It was like it was more than caffeine and buzzing, and I felt like I was going to float, and I wasn't even doing anything except walking between them.
Okay. Well, maybe it was like, you know, within your being, you felt like you were levitating, not necessarily you do it on a physical level.
No, the witnesses saw them physically levitating.
Okay, well, I have to go do the research on that.
I know, definitely. I'm looking for the book.
Oh, gee, I got to go down to Laguna. Okay.
I'll just send you the name of the book.
Okay.
And the engineer.
Sounds like a field trip. Sounds like a field trip to me. So
he's on Laguna Beach.
We've got a couple minutes. Laguna Canyon Road. Okay, well, it's going to be a field trip. So just want to remind everybody about, you know, just so many wonderful things, so many tools, all different kinds of articles and things that are available on HeartMath. And one of the reasons I brought it up was, again, with Amy's show on 209. We were talking about with the conference that she'd gone to, that they had had a researcher that was doing studies where they were looking at the resonance of people's energy when they were asked to meditate. And they have them going on all over the world. And you could actually join in that research if you want to. So go to the research department with that and be able to check that out. So all kinds of really wonderful things to be able to do that, and lots of ways to help people to be feeling balanced and just very much in a healthy way for themselves. So, Ms. Gloria, always a pleasure to have you joining us here at the cafe.
I found his name. Is it too late?
Oh, you found his name? Okay.
Yeah, it's Go Dr.
ahead.
Fred Bell.
Dr. Fred Bell, if you want to learn how
and
to meditate. Okay.
His book is called Rays of Truth, Crystals of Light.
Rays of Truth and Crystals of Light. Okay, well, you know, we may look at him and see if we can, like, getting him on the show. Rays of Light. Okay, I'm going to write that down. Okay, girl, thank you again for always being here at the cafe, and we'll see you next time.
We hope you enjoyed listening to the Transformation Cafe podcast. To learn more, visit transformation-cafe.com for show notes, guest information, and links to previous shows. You can also subscribe to the Transformation Cafe podcast on iTunes. Join us again next time at the Transformation Cafe, a fun place to nourish your soul.